And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of September 12th, 2019. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Very well. Very well. So, Mariah, September is an important time for climate activism, it turns out. Lots of stuff happening. One of the things that's going to happen during the month of September is something called a climate strike, which is a topic we've mentioned before on this program. On September 20th and September 27th, there will be a climate strike held globally around the world, even here in Massachusetts. What do you got on that? Do you have any background that people ought to know?
Well, yeah. I mean, so we have talked repeatedly about this, you know, brave is not even begin to describe this 16-year-old girl, Greta Thunberg, who, goodness, how many months has it been? Almost a year.
A year, yeah.
Yeah, almost a year. Maybe it has been a year. Started saying, I think maybe she started with a two-week school protest where she just didn't go to school because she
all
said,
by
what's
herself.
The point?
All by herself. Nobody else, right? She just all by herself.
And then then she started doing it just on Fridays, and then her movement caught on, and all over the world, people started joining her until she has recently been, I think she's been nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize, and she has been
What's
featured
the justification
on covers of
for
magazines.
The strike? I mean, what was her rationale?
So, I mean, she basically said, why should I bother learning anything if this world, I cannot apply it to this world because the world is falling down in pieces around me. What does my learning do if it's not being utilized to, you know, if the science that I'm learning about isn't even being listened to? Mm-hmm. And what's the point of all of the wonderful things I could learn in school if there's not going to be a world in which I can apply those things? I think I'm just sort of putting words into her mouth, but I think that was the gist of it. And so she's been doing this protest and has motivated students all over the world to join her. And 350, I'm pretty sure it was 350 that I know 350 is certainly promoting it widely, has caught a hold of it and said, hey, adults, we can't just let the students take this. We need to jump into this. So September 20th through 27th is going to be a week of climate action. And they're saying on September 20th, a bunch of students are going to, you know, leave their classes and stand in some solidarity with Greta against climate inaction, essentially. And why the adults should be right out there with them. And mm-hmm. So September 20th and September 27th, this day of action, these 2 days of action are occurring all over the world.
Right. And I think the call, yes, is exactly right. If the kids are going to literally strike from classes, then adults should support them by trying to, by leaving work or whatever they have to do to support these actions. Turns out that go ahead.
By extension, it's sort of the same idea. What's the point of going to work and endeavoring in all these, you know, tasks that we are creating for ourselves to move the world forward in important ways if we're going to be stuck because we can't go to work because there's a flood separating us from our travel to work, or because there's a hurricane coming, or whatever it is. Let's walk out of our jobs by choice to remind people to take action so that we don't have to walk out of our jobs by force because of nature.
Well, there you go. And I think that these events on the week of the 20th of September coincide with what has become an annual United Nations summit on climate change, dating back all the way to 2014. I don't know if you remember there was a huge march in New York City in September of 2014, it coincident with a United Nations climate summit where all the bigwigs flew in from around the world to meet at the UN in New York. Something similar is happening this year. There is a United Nations climate summit that will happen on the 23rd of September in New York City. And you watch various, you'll see the current occupant of our White House probably mosey up to New York City to give a speech to the United Nations sometime during the September, because that's when the General Assembly term begins, right? This is the annual process. But there will be this summit meeting at the United Nations on September 23rd, and our friend Greta Thunberg will be speaking at that, right?
I keep going
back and forth. I call her Thunberg. I'm not sure which. I'll try to stick with Thunberg. She will be speaking at that event on the 23rd of September. God bless her, right?
Yep, and notably, she did not fly there. She took a, it's a all-electric, renewable energy-powered sailboat across the Atlantic, two-week trip across the Atlantic, because she does not fly because of the greenhouse gas emissions associated with flying.
And the critique that, oh, well, she can do it, but no one else can, doesn't really hold true for me, because what she has done is kind of this point of principle that it is possible. Right? It may not be easy, and most people probably would not choose to sail across the Atlantic in a sailboat, but you can do it, right? And she has done it. Again, you know, chops to her for taking the action and standing by her principles and sailing across. And I'm sure people followed the I certainly was following it on Twitter as she would making they have sort of latitude and longitude reports as they sailed across. And that boat looked very tiny. I mean, and you start thinking about being in a, what was it, a 60-foot sailboat crossing the Atlantic. I think that though, so she, Greta Thunberg has arrived in New York. She has basically, I think, is recovering from what is, what has to be considered an arduous journey across the Atlantic, getting ready for the speech next week, planning stuff. In the interim, there, of course, has been some pushback from people who should know better. Case in point is that in the Boston Globe this past week, there was a op-ed piece by a gentleman called Neil Ferguson. Of course, it's written in a Scottish, N-I-A-L-L, Neil Ferguson, who is a author, clearly a very smart guy. I've read a bunch of his books. Currently out of the Hoover Institute, which is a conservative think tank out on the West Coast. But basically, he wrote a hit piece, which can only be regarded as condescending, about Greta Thunberg's age and inexperience and how we all shouldn't worry that it's probably all going to be okay. And, you know, Greta, maybe you ought to come back when you're 60 in the year 2059, and you'll see that all of your hysteria was misplaced. And I was distressed by that because it is of a kind with a bunch of other articles, a bunch of other grown men who have attacked Greta for various kinds of reasons that I don't even want to go into. But I've attacked this young woman, essentially accusing her of all kinds of... it's awful. And I guess it seems to me reprehensible what these grown men have done. Speaks, however, to the abject terror that Greta Thunberg strikes in the hearts of these self-satisfied, complacent old guys who think that they're going to lose their august position at the Hoover Institute, where they get to write op-ed pieces. If Greta Thunberg is my, I'm going to stop there. Maybe you can take over for a minute.
I appreciate that. You had to be very restrained in your word choice against these people that are writing these awful articles against her. But you know what? Kudos to her for catching. I mean, I don't know if this is exactly right, but right, all press is good press in some ways. Like, kudos to her for being so influential that they are now running scared and writing about her. She is making waves, and I mean, it's not okay the way that they are, you know, denigrating her. But I'm really happy that she is making them feel challenged. You know, that's a pretty big thing to be a 16-year-old girl with a really fantastic and strong climate message scaring establishment men.
Yes. And I agree. I mean, it's remarkable. And I think that And I guess where I, as usual, want to kind of dig in and go the next step deeper. The idea that these, and I'll, white male guys are so vicious in their attacks speaks to something that is visceral and real. And it's like this third rail that you don't really get to. I mean, most of the time, these guys pretend, that they're the rational actors, that they we have to talk about, everyone that they pretend to an intelligence and a wisdom that they don't have. When Greta Thunberg comes along and touches this live rail, right, it's like they've been tased, and all of a sudden they do this crazy stuff. What is it about her and the climate work that is so threatening to these guys? And I think if you think about that and follow that, maybe it teaches us how to talk to the, maybe what, I guess, I don't know, I don't think all people carry that same kind of nastiness in their soul, but it does speak to, maybe it helps us, or maybe it doesn't. I don't know. Am I wrong? Is it worth pursuing the question of why someone like Neil Ferguson, with a PhD in economics, feels he has to throw a hand grenade at Greta Thunberg? I mean, why? And what do we learn by thinking about that? Because I'm tired of thinking about it. It hurts my heart.
Yeah, that's a good question, Ted. I mean, I certainly think that I like to give people like that as little attention as possible, right? I mean, he's not addressing problems in any productive way. He's just being mean. But, maybe understanding, I don't know, maybe understanding or giving sort of thought to why he might be acting like that could provide some sort of a lens onto some of the obstacles we're facing with the paradigm shift needed to really address the climate crisis in the way that we need to. Perhaps there is some learning that could be done there.
Yeah, I would
It's a
hope
good question.
that people maybe like me, right? People who are not climate active, but old guys would look in the mirror and say, "Do I really need to be scared of someone like, because I don't know. I think these people who write the op-eds are at an extreme, but there may be some continuum, and that we would all do ourselves a favor by recognizing the little things in our soul.
Well,
Anyway.
I mean, some of it, a lot of it, I'm sure, comes down to fear of different. What, things that are different we're afraid of, and when we're afraid of something, we attack it. And, instead of allowing it to shift this set of beliefs that we hold true, we just go after it and say it couldn't possibly be true. It's different than what I've always known, and therefore it's wrong.
Well, I guess I mean
Right?
I would say that now that I think of it, someone like Neil Ferguson, I mean his prestige, his position in society, his self-image as a wise man, a wise guy who gets to write books and stuff, that is threatened severely if someone who's 16 years old has wisdom that he doesn't have. That scares those guys, and it puts their position of power and authority at risk. And if that doesn't bring out the ferocity, I don't know what does, right? It's only the idea that they could lose what they've got, and they aren't quite as important as they think they are. Whew. All right, I'm gonna stop there. Let's talk about the debate. Let's switch to something else before I get too wound up again. There was this past weekend, a very interesting event that happened on CNN. So, of course, it was behind a paywall. You might not have gotten to see it if you don't have cable. But for 7 hours, an unbelievable 7 hours, there was a reasonably thoughtful one-on-one discussion with each of the 10 Democratic contenders for the presidency. And it was, I mean, twofold. It was a remarkable event. Evidently, it did not get the viewership that one might hope, but it was a remarkable event nonetheless. And I don't know. I think that as we are not going to discuss individual candidates' positions and compare them or any of that kind of stuff, but as an event, a climate debate, Was it a good thing, do you think, Mariah? I mean, are we better off for having done a climate debate or not?
I found it fascinating, and the Huffington Post did. Well, we might get to this later, but the Huffington Post did sort of a roundup of every candidate's climate position, which is really helpful. But it was also great to hear how well the candidates could speak on many of the issues that are many of the platforms. And, you know, we have talked in the past about painting the vision of what a renewable future would look like. And it was great to hear how much they knew about that and how articulate they were in the things that we need to pay attention to, like, you know, environmental justice and, Native American people and how
and jobs
respecting
for people
their land
who would
and
be
jobs.
Displaced. And I agree with you. It is remarkable that as a class, and I guess it speaks to the shifting tides of politics, is that all of these people now are much, much more conversant with the climate issue, right? They actually have plans where in the past they could say, oh, you know, I accept the science and move on, right? And that's accepting the science doesn't work anymore. As someone said, you don't get a cookie for accepting the science, right? That's not.
Yeah,
not,
it's kindergarten, right?
It's kindergarten stuff.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, one of the other things we talked about on a podcast is who should moderate the debate, right? Because you have to be both a good moderator and, you know, sort of a personality on television, but you also have to have a pretty good knowledge of climate science and how to ask follow-up questions. And it seems like in this debate, the way they did it was pretty good, right? Where they did have some CNN hosts, moderators that were doing it, but then they were asking, I think they were asking sort of basically mediocre questions, right? They were fine, but they were just not really getting to the heart of things. And so they had a lot of, guests calling in with questions, and many of these guests were very well informed and had these excellent questions that got in, you know, in this very raw way into, you know, sort of, I lost my home due to climate change. What are you going to do about it? You know, they really brought a lot of human power to the debate in powerful ways, as well as there were scientists that called in with questions. There were people who were really well versed in all of the climate politics that called in. So really added a nice lens to it.
I think I agree with you. It was interesting. They did have, you know, they would introduce people who were, you know, graduate students in climate science at various colleges. And it was a thoughtful discussion. And clearly the audience had been, I don't want to say selected, but they wanted to get people who would ask good questions so that when the moderators, who are all the classic CNN talking heads that you see all the time, right, they would, and they had one guy in the back, as I remember, who was supposed to be sort of the professional, and he had little videotaped questions that they would ask from time to time, and he was kind of keeping everybody honest. His questions weren't the best, but nonetheless, I guess that was a tribute to CNN trying to have some kind of authoritative questioning. The people, Aaron Burnett's and Cuomo guys of the world, right? They kept asking.
Anderson Cooper
kept asking things like, "Well, what about our hamburgers? And what about our incandescent light bulbs? And what about, are you going to ban plastic straws?" Classic thing was, "Oh, how much are you going to make the American people suffer?" So many of the questions were framed in terms of the cost of action, right, as being prohibitive, and how do we get around that, as opposed to, as we've said multiple times here, the cost of inaction, right? The questions were framed the opposite way, but.
Yeah, and one of the best answers, I will not name names, but one of the best answers that someone gave to these questions about individual actions was that when we talk about, you know, being concerned with individual actions, we're doing exactly what the fossil fuel corporations want us to do, which is to look at what we as people are doing wrong instead of the massive industrial contributions to carbon emissions. And that's something that we have talked about. Marianne Anise Hagelaar wrote an article where she said, you know, it's not about individual actions. It's about the system change. It's about addressing, getting these corporations to be held responsible for their climate impact. It's like 20 companies that are responsible for the majority of the greenhouse gas emissions in the world. And so that was one of the best responses I thought.
Yes.
Several others thought of about in the debate.
That's right.
It's really hearkening back to saying, like, don't fall prey to this individual action thing. It's about system change.
Right. No, I agree. I agree. I guess the tweet that I saw, which I like the best, and I'll say this in closing, but I mean, the winner of the climate debate was a guy named Jay Inslee, who's no longer running for president. But when he was running for president, he had the most detailed climate plans going. And when he stopped running for president, he said, oh, by the way, all my plans are open source. Please take whatever you want and use it as you see. And several of the candidates have, in fact, taken over the Inslee plans. And there's no doubt that Inslee, who's now no longer running, had an enormous impact on the whole campaign, because all these guys now, they must have a thoughtful answer. And there you go. I mean, do you think that's progress? I mean,
Absolutely.
I think it's progress. Yeah. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
So we'll end on a good thing, but tell me, what's a good thing about the climate strike that's coming up? I think that what we'll put up is a link to a Facebook page that has an event on Boston City Hall Plaza that extends from 9 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon on Friday, September 20th. You can go to the link for more details. It's easy enough to Google Climate Strike 2019 Boston. You'll find all the same stuff, right? You don't really need to you guys are all out there in podcast land are smart enough to find this stuff on your own. But there are events happening around the world. They're happening in Boston. They're happening in New York City. They're happening in your town. So take a look and try and find something to do on September 20th. Right, Mariah?
Right. Yeah. And also, I hope I can say this, but we are going to put up a link. I hope you will put up a link for this Huffington Post article, which does a nice job ranking.
Yeah.
You know, it has a ranking by advocates for each of the climate, for each of the Democratic candidates on their climate plan. So it really breaks down the jobs that they're promising, the cost of their climate plan, what they're going to ban, what stands out, what's being criticized, when will they have zero emissions. So it gives all this information for every single one of the candidates, and it's thorough and it's informed. So it's worth taking a look at, because of course the most important thing you can do for climate is to vote.
That's right. There you go. Yes. So what we'll do is we'll certainly put that up link to comparing all these different proposals. That's a great thing. That'll be at the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You'll be able to get through to it on the Facebook page. It's /massclimateaction. If you want, you can send us an email suggesting your plan to solve the climate crisis to podcast@massclimateaction.net. You can listen to this show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, almost all of the major podcast distribution apps. I want to thank D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. And we want to close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.